Right, we're back for the second episode of, I don't even know, technically we do in theory on Last Foundation. We did at one point try to do like seasons based around like, you know, the usually in League of Legends you could actually just do it specifically. They actually have an official season. We don't really do that in League, so whatever. But we'll say this is like the reboot. So it's episode two. We did the first one, obviously, where we did the whole preamble and then also sort of chastised all the horrible people for sending Pimp all those mean messages and writing flyers and throwing them around the streets of Cologne. Totally unacceptable behaviour. But now it's just time to talk about some CS, though. So here's the thing, though, Pimp. This is also the nature of podcasts, sadly, which is we used to have a joke back in the day on By the Numbers that we actually have a conspiracy theory that by the end of the show, companies in esports had figured out if you don't want us to discuss drama, you just drop the drama one day after like we recorded. Because I think we used to record every Monday or Tuesday. And the amount of times, mate, that drama would come out on a Wednesday. So it had like the maximum chance to sort of be out of the news cycle again by the time it was next week. I almost feel like that would transfer. Because, mate, we just did that whole episode about Spirit, Zwe, what does the future mean? And now we know that basically they're already changing the Spirit roster anyway. Tenere's here, apparently, by the way. Look, as usual, any news coming out of the Eastern European scene, if you haven't noticed, it's not that it's wrong, it's just that they tend to oversex and overhype the number on the transfer. I would just say take every number and take a few hundred thousand off, and you're probably more in the reasonable range. But presumably, this is $1 million at least, something in that range, you know, quite a nice amount of money to sign Tenere from Heroic. And essentially, this is what's funny. We can sort of tie this straight back into what we were sort of discussing last episode, which was our totally get if you're Spirit, how on a personal level, and also to save money, by the way, if you win the major, no matter whether we all say it after that Shanghai major, like, well, that Magic's had a life series in the final and that won't continue. Yeah, but if you do have that performance in the final and you do win the major, if the team really believes, like, hey, we could be good enough to win, I can see why the org gives you another season and goes, okay, then you know what, just like Na'Vi. Look, I wouldn't have said even Na'Vi's team last year would do it again. But you know what? You've sort of earned a chance to do it. But at the same time, though, Pimp, what does tear me up about that a bit is that's almost like to save money and to be like nice to the people in the team. But I have to say, yeah. I mean, listen, mate, you are, if people don't know, Pimp is literally a Chelsea fan, so I know he must be able to appreciate this point. If you are in high-level sports, though, and you are ruthless and you want to win, bro, you literally, if you have the money, should sign players. You know about this, mate. Should sign players every single offseason if you can. If you can make your team better, you just do it because you never know what the other teams are going to be like. You never know what's going to happen to you. By the way, the obvious angle in Spirit is, God forbid Donk ever stops doing 1.4 ratings at events. Suddenly we're going to need another player. So they've done this move, which quite frankly is the opposite of that approach of sort of give people time. Like Zontix has just won Cologne and he's basically been told like, congrats, you actually played well. You're fired. Like that's it. You're on the bench or who even knows what you feel. So what do you think of this move today coming in for Zontix? Basically like, right, it's after EWC is the premise, right? I think they play that and that's after was like the official reason. Yeah. So it's actually kind of like the opposite philosophy. What do you think of this move, Pimp?
I love it. I can't help to think back of the Vitality move when they removed Dupree and brought in Flamesy after winning the major. I think that was one of the most underrated moves ever. I think that's ballsy. Exactly how it should be. Yeah, exactly. It's like you described it pretty well. Look towards football, look towards any you know sport where there's actually, you know, an awful lot of money involved where you have to be one or two steps ahead all the time. We often complain in esports that, you know, money are tight and we can't really figure it out. But we're also acting like we're small boys league in terms of how we do transfers. Whenever you suggested replacing Dupree with Flamesy back in the day, that was actually a good move. People get on the fence, you know, they get emotional. You can't kick a play after winning a major. And same here, you know, you can't kick a play after winning Cologne and now they're finally back and et cetera, et cetera. I absolutely love this move. If they believe Tenere is a better player than Zontix and they can slot him in to their team, believing that will make the team stronger, I don't give a fuck whether you won three tournaments in a row. It'll be the same with Vitality. Let's say the Vitality actually went on a run, you know, and won six or seven tournaments in a row. But in that period, Messi was kind of meh, not performing to a high level. Obviously, he's doing well. But if you could then get the chance of signing, I don't know, Jim Fett or some bit, you know, or whoever else who could slot into that role, I don't give a fuck how much you won up until that point. If it makes your chances of winning in the future better, then you have to make that move. So your analogy in terms of saying that the players kind of earn the right to show if they can do it one more time, sure, I buy into that. But from a pure cynical point of view, as a guy who is just invested into watching, you know, Counter-Strike, and I just want the teams to be at their absolute best. I don't really care what players are playing or any of the personal relations. I think this move is baller. I think Tenere is a great player. I've been calling him out ever since he joined Heroic and ever since I saw him play the first time last year, that he's a proper talent. going to Spirit is perhaps a little bit surprising in the sense that it's a big move and it comes with big expectations. That being said, if Spirit believes that he's going to slot in and do just slightly better than Suntex, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I've got to say, this is actually a move that I think sort of a slam dunk. Like, I don't really see the downside on this, especially because, like, I noticed people already have done the thing they do with, like, every Falcons move, where they try to make it seem like the player has to literally take every CT role and every T role, otherwise it's not, like, the right move or it's going to make it trickier. But I would go the other way on this one, because to me, actually, I think one of the problems they had with Zontics in Spirit is, in English, the term we use is called idiosyncratic. It basically means, like, you're, like, really, really peculiar in a very specific way to you, though. Like, essentially, like, I would be that sort of person as an analyst, isn't it? I'm not like the traditional analyst. I don't know my style. And if you had me on a desk, people either have to adapt to me or I have to adapt to them. I can't just do a normal style. Like, I'm not someone you just throw in there. So I would say he was like that as a player. The problem I always thought you had with him as a player was, I thought he had a very strange player profile, because I do think, sadly, that he did almost always get hated on, especially because, by the way, I think, like, Magix is the person traditionally you'd on in the squad because of his role, but because he came across so well on camera, whereas actually Zontics doesn't even try in that sense. Like, he literally is just like a fucking replicant out of Blade Runner who gives off no emotion, and you're just like, holy shit, is this guy a robot or something? So because he give off none of that, and then his game, here's the problem, his game isn't sexy. His game is like actually sort of, it's actually sort of the boring, like, meat and potatoes play you want from someone who's like an anchor or just a fucking late round player, just play really standard. The joke even is, even his style of play wasn't sexy. He doesn't even shoot you in the head. He really does just do like some old school, like, three bullets in the chest kills you too. It's like, he was doing that shit, you know. So what the problem is, I get why some people were never up on this guy. And also, if you are just like a Donk super fan, it'll look like him and Magix are just dragging you down all the time. You're the reason Donk doesn't win, even if he scores a million, basically. But the problem I have was, he was a good player. I'll never say, I don't know that he was ever actually an elite player. I did have a problem with him being like the third best in their team. But here's the difference. If they'd have chosen to stick with the Zwei lineup, I still think he could have been like a functional player, and they could have won with some of the Zay guy. So my angle is this. One, I actually think already that was such a strange player that it doesn't even matter to me if Tanea or Zwei play the roles he plays. I think between the two of them, they've both shown, by the way, they're pretty good mechanical players who were inexperienced but showed good things at like one level below. Between the two of them, you can figure out these roles, mate. If anything, you could even argue maybe this opens a bit of the game up for Zwei too. Maybe they like find a compromise where some of them get some aspect of the game, some gets the other. Because I agree with you. The Tanea guy, I actually think, is one of the players when he joined Heroic that just looked, eye test just looked like an obvious signing, mate. I didn't necessarily think it would be a team spirit. Obviously, that's like the top of the world. But I did think he was better than Heroic, put it that way. I thought he was kind of like, he should have been himself maybe in a G2 type team or something. You know, I think he deserves a better team. I love this move, mate. I actually think this, the key thing for me is this. I don't know how you work it out if you're Halley or Chopper. But again, listen, you figure out the roles, mate. Because if you can get this to any more firepower than the last roster, we had this discussion. I said, well, mate, Donk's ready to just win everything. He's ready to win every tournament out there. Like, this is also super spicy for the whole, like, let's see these guys against Vitality. Let's see these guys against Falcons and Mouse. Let's have them all those matches.
Yeah, I think there's two main takeaways from what you said right here that I really want to hone in on. First being that if you compare Spirit to the counterparts, you know, if you compare Spirit to who they contest trophies against, Vitality, Mouse, let's say Falcons in that mix as well. And you said it yourself, if your third best player is Suntix, you compare your third best player on the other teams as well. Third best player in Mouse, Spinks, significantly better than Suntix. Third best player in Vitality, Flamesy, I'd say significantly better than Suntix. Third best player in Falcons, you know, Kyusuki, Monizy, Nico, take your pick. Significantly better than. Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the whole point, that if that's your third best player, then that is going to be perhaps a bit of an issue. Then the good thing for you, if you're Spirit, you got the absolute best player in Donk in that regard. But still, you know, that's a way of upgrading your team. Another one is Suntix and the potential, right? If you're Spirit and you're like, does he get any better the next 12 months? Odds are that he's not going to get any better, right? He's been around for a long time. We've seen his level. As I said, I think he's also a bit underrated. I think Suntix is a great player, and I think he can join another CIS team and bring them up to a very high level as well. He's not going to be done for. You know, it's not a player that leaves this team and then we won't see him again, unless there's some personal sides to this we don't know. But the potential of Suntix has already been seen. You know, he's not going to get any better. He's not going to up his rating by 0.1, you know, for next year or whatever. Whereas if you sign a player like Tanea, we don't really know his full potential. Still relatively new. A lot of potential to develop, coming into a team as well, getting to work with Halley. So I think depending on pretty much no matter how you look at it, you know, from different angles, I think it's an upgrade. And I think the upgrade may not only be right now in this very moment, but I think the upgrade could be very severe in 6 or 12 months from now. So again, if you compare Spirit to the counterparts in Vitality and Mouse and in Falcons for that matter as well, now you signed a third best player that is actually, you know, maybe even going to contest to be the second best player. I think Tenere with time could be up there in the leagues of Zero. Maybe we'll have to wait and see. But I really do believe that Tenere has an awful lot of potential. Question is, can he get the roles where he gets to express it? Is it maybe a too big of a step for now? I don't know. But just the fact that you have a quote-unquote third best player within your team that is comparable to your competition, that's a step in the right direction, also for the future for Spirit. So as you said, I love the move. I think I do feel bad for Suntex in a sense. I don't think he didn't play his way out of the team.
No,
it's not like he had bad performance that then made he's not going to be part of the team anymore. There's just another player right now on the market, apparently $4 million, a little bit expensive, I'd say, and still that is potentially a better fit. And as you said, if you can upgrade your lineup, I don't care when you do it, I don't care how you do it, you have to do it, simple as it is.
Yeah, two things. One is a quick one, which is I also feel like, I mean, when you listed off the teams that they have to compete against, then obviously we have to put Falcons in there because you look at the players they have. Eventually, everyone assumes they're going to figure it out and they're going to kick it up. Or the joke is they are just going to sign another player and eventually it'll work one way or another. So if you look at those squads, the obvious thing you lacked was firepower compared to them. I mean, the joke is even having Donk, who maybe has the most firepower, didn't even out sort of the aggregate. Like all those teams go pretty deep. Some of them third and fourth player, like we're saying. Pretty tasty players. Like the joke is they should be better players on other teams potentially. So one angle is I do think the problem you had in Spirit, I thought this from the moment I first saw them last year at Katowice, is that was obviously the concern, is they distributed firepower through the whole lineup, because this lineup, I feel like the one with the Magics and Zontics, mate, I think that would have been, if it had been 2 years earlier, that could have been a fantastic CSGO lineup, mate. I feel like CSGO was more the game of like team play off each other, hold angles, stuff like that. Whereas CS2, people have made it an extreme stereotype, but put it this way, it at least does seem to favour T-side fragging a lot more than it did before. Yeah. It's why I actually think some of the squads, it's why I always think the real one that torments me about the whole Falcons move is, people think it's just Falcons and the fact they didn't have Nerds. I feel like that lineup just might not have worked in CS2, mate. I mean, again, we'll see if any of those players ever rise to the top again. That was a lineup from CSGO where they sort of min-maxed the skill and the roles, and it just was like a, what I always call like a canny squad. Like, you're not supposed to be the best, but you got something, there's like a special quality about you, you fit together. Essentially, chemistry was one of the things I thought teams like that I emphasised. Whereas I do think in CS2, you almost can't get away with it unless you've got a certain threshold of skill, and this does match it. But also, when you said that, that's the biggest problem you have right now is the classic one of all the players that get caught when it's not their fault, pimps or Dexter on Falcons. I mean, the joke is, on paper, he never should have been caught. He was just the MVP of a fucking tournament. And they had to say, sorry, it literally is the Nork device thing. Like, we've got fucking Monacy joining, and even he had to sort of be like, yeah, well, understandable, thank you. Like, you can't complain. But then he sat on the bench all this time, and we're like, when are you going to play? What are you going to talk? Well, the one problem with Zontics is this, right? People might not know this because it hasn't been brought up, because understandably it's a sensitive topic, but obviously he was a Ukrainian playing in a Russian team with all Russian players. And I can tell you, the few times I tried very carefully behind the scenes last year, sort of asking like, what's the deal with that? Like, does he not have a problem with that? They said, oh, don't worry, he gets like hated on quite heavily, actually. Like, apparently people do criticize him and ask like, why do you play for that team and stuff? And maybe you should do like a lot of the Ukrainians in CS have and split over and not play with them. So the one angle I have is this, right? Which is I'm going to look into this. I'm just floating this now. I have no concrete information, which is I'm going to actually go and try and dig into that a bit more very carefully to find out what is his situation. Because I saw someone imply, this is why I'm going to be careful about it. I saw someone imply that maybe the reason he played in Spirit was maybe he is one of those Ukrainians who does live in the eastern part, where some of them do essentially think of themselves as more aligned with Russia, or they don't have a problem with Russia or something. So I'm going to look at that. The reason why I say that is because if that isn't a problem, bro, if it's just that he was the one weird Ukrainian guy playing in a Russian team, but technically he has no problem with Ukrainians, the rest of the spoken world, an obvious team to me, because I'm assuming he can speak the biz, maybe Na'Vi can consider him, mate. If Na'Vi doesn't want big name players, I wouldn't hate a player, because I think that's the sort of player, mate, you need to have. Like I say, I don't think you just throw, he's not a plug and play player. You don't just throw this guy in a squad and go frag. Like, I feel like you need someone like a Blade or someone to figure out how you're going to use this player. Because like I say, I actually feel like he got too hated on, Pimp. I feel like people, really acted like he was shit. Whereas I always used to watch him and go, look, he definitely, by the way, as famously came back to haunt him with that pressure comment. He definitely would sometimes choke. I'll give you that. If you put him in a big semi-final, he's the one I was always a little bit scared about. But I always used to tell people, for me, it's never like he choked most of the time. He's more one of those guys you flip a coin. Half the time, maybe they do. Half the time, he's just fine. Like, mate, in this Cologne that they just done, I thought he was totally fine. He was just a pretty good player. Like, he's not a superstar, yeah, but he's a good player. So the obvious question, as you say, though, is, I think, just like Dexter, I think his talent deserves a team. I think if Tessis gets Banks, he deserves a team. The question is, though, and I'll throw it back to you, can you even conceptualise where that could be? What sort of a team do you think could need him? Where would you see him going? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think VP is sad and mad about the timing, to be honest. I think VP
were
to get a player like Suntex, you know, not against Perfecto, but Perfecto is a bit of a gamble, has been out of the game for quite some time. Sure. I think you start in Suntex instead of Perfecto, and that team starts to make an awful lot of sense in that regard. Not that Perfecto hasn't done well for VP, but I think Suntex would be a better fit and a player you could just slot in straight away and get results straight away. So I think that's an opportunity if Perfecto doesn't work out, if someone else in VP doesn't work out. Seemingly, as you said, like, I don't know if he's willing to play with another Russian squad.
Who knows?
Seemingly, maybe he is. Internationally, I mean, he does speak English to some degree. He can do interviews. He doesn't seem excited about it.
He always seemed, by the way, he never seemed like he had like that really fucked up broken English or something. He seemed fine when he talked. It just seemed like he didn't want to talk.
Fine. You know? Yeah, that was always the sense you got, you know, when you tried to interview him. Like, it was like he looked at you and he was just feeling despised of you. Like, he did not want to talk to any of us at all, you know. Whether that was me, Freya, trying to do interviews, or James Banks easily, who is usually a guy who can get everyone to talk. Like, Suntex just didn't give a damn, you know. So I don't know. I also do want to throw into the mix that's the one angle we always have to keep in mind. Like, we do not know how they act in practice. We do not know how they act, you know, when they're traveling, when they're at tournaments. And judging from his body language, you know, not the most exciting guy to be around. Maybe he's a jokester. Who knows? Maybe he's always, you know, coming into to practice with a good move or a good energy. But he strikes me as a player that is just a bit, you know, bored in a sense. And he doesn't add any energy to any team. And sometimes I think there's also a level to accept that when you're on a team, you need a certain amount of energy, you know, and I don't see any of the spirit players, you know, really being that hyped up guy. Shiro has tried to take over that role, you know, seen some of the vlogs as well from Spirit, and he's seemingly doing a decent job of that. But I do think that you can only have so many, you know, laid down players, so many JKS types of players within your team in a sense. And I think Suntex were one of those players as well. And maybe he just showed up to practice with a bad mood, you know, a bad energy, a bad vibe, or whatever. All these, you know, unknowns that we don't know anything about can also play in quite significantly when you judge a player whether or not he's going to be good team. One thing is how he performs in the games, one thing is how he performs in big games as well. But if you have a player like Suntex, who is a decent player, a good player, you know, always on the balance of, you know, are you good enough, but you then bring in and add to the fact that he's not the best guy at practice, or he's not the guy bringing a lot of energy, or constantly requires to be talked up to, or the coach has to focus a lot on him, you know, to bring his mood in, or whatever that may be, then it doesn't matter if your rating is just okay. It will instantly be perceived within the team as not good enough. So there's also some digging that goes into that, you know. I think a lot of the teams out there needs to do more scouting. They need to speak to ex-teammates, you know, and they need to do a better job at kind of vetting the players in that sense, because the amount of times I've heard of, you know, organizations signing players and then be like, oh, we didn't know this about you. Okay. Oh, we didn't consider this, and now you just spend an awful lot of money and you destroyed 6 months of progress, you know, signing a player that was never going to fit in. Shocks, great example in Team Liquid, horrible due diligence done on that part, I feel. That could also be the case. So I don't know enough about Suntex to have a qualified guess whether or not he could go international, but just based on the player type, VP would be a great fit if he wants to and if they want to.
Being as, obviously, we've been watching the Blast Bounty recently. As the show goes on, we will get through all the big names. So I actually want to sort of drop down for a moment. And by the way, the fact I'm even giving this preamble tells you that's not the best time for fucking Danish CS. Because normally, Pimp, I'd love to be able to go, let's talk about Astralis, one of the best teams. No, like, unfortunately, Astralis right now, here's the thing. What's tough is, I like the Huxley move. I was someone who was in favour of that. I wasn't really a big fan of that KD and Gabble, especially when I found out he isn't even on the Ops. It's like, I always knew, unfortunately. Look, I didn't know it would go as bad badly as that, but I didn't ever think like he was the guy taking him back to the top pimp. The difference is I like the Hooksy move. Like, I do think he is the right sort of an IGL. I even think the people missed in G2 is I don't think G2 even suited his style. Like, I think he was being forced to be more open because, not for any toxic reason, but I just think, mate, any team that has Nico and Monacy in is destined to play open loose CS and just let those two do what they're going to do because they know individually better than any tactic. Like, unless they literally had like Glaive from like 7 years ago come out of a time machine, they're just doing what they're doing. So I actually think people have misunderstood Hooksy. They think he can only do like Nico go kill. Whereas I'll always tell people, if you ever do go and look when he had Yabby back in Copenhagen Flames, they definitely ran a bunch of tactics in that team. And actually, that wasn't a super talented team. That was a team that was like making use of different pieces in its own interesting way and had to like specialize on certain maps. So I do think he's a good signing. But the problem is, there's something missing in this team still, Pimp. Like, this team just can't have like two tournaments in a row where they look really good. They can have one where they look good and then one where they look average or whatever, right? We'll start big picture. What do you think what are the issues in Astralis for you? What do they miss? What do they lack? Who's not doing well enough? How do you diagnose them?
It's a really good question. I feel like if you know the answer, like I wouldn't be working anymore. I think they'd be worth a lot of money, to be fair. Because fuck me, they spend a lot of money.
That's true as well.
You know, for a long, long time. Yeah, to a point where, like, the rumors came out, a couple of months ago that they may or may not go bankruptcy.
Yeah,
they
may
or may not sell the team and shut down the Astralis brand, you know, just to save whatever can be saved. And that's how I approached them as well. I feel like this is sort of like the last chance, in a sense. I think that CS team needs to give results or show up consistently to even have a chance of surviving under the Astralis name. I'm sure other organizations would love to pick them up, you know, still a lot of profile players and a team, you know, that plays Counter-Strike at a high level, but just not the same as it used to be. I don't know how to diagnose them. I agree with you. I think Hooksy was a great signing. I came way too late. Signing Kagan to play the rifle was just fucking ridiculous from the get-go.
If you did the same move but a year ago, instead of Kagan, if it was Hooksy you signed back when he got, I think that was the perfect time for it, Pimp.
I think now we would be in the time where we would judge them, okay, what's the potential of this lineup, you know? Now you had time to build up. Now you had time to build up to a style. You also nailed it kind of with Copenhagen Flames. People don't remember that, but Copenhagen Flames played almost like a Snappy-esque style, I'd say, you know, where there was a structure, there were certain strats, but it was, you know, sometimes out of spawn calling, sometimes individuals were set free, but not the G2 way where every round was up for interpretation. Every round could be, you know, Monacy and Nico go kill somewhere, or Monacy and Nico would call something mid-round, and then that would be the strat. Copenhagen Flames had players like Rory, Nico Dust, that had certain freedoms within a system, and I think that's where Hooks works the best. And I also do think that's why Astralis are playing better now, that he's given them a sort of like a framework, and now the players are starting to work within that framework. It takes time, though, to build up synergy. It takes time to build up enough synergy where the players feel comfortable enough to do the right plays at the right timings, instead of always had to rely on the individual instinct from each player all the time. So I think Astralis will continue to grow better. I'm just not sure where the potential is at. You know, if peak Astralis with this current iteration is a top 5 team, I don't think so. Maybe it could be top 6, top 7, you know, occasionally make the playoff, maybe get into a semifinal at a big event once in a while, consistently attend the majors. I think that's realistic, but I think that's the potential of the current lineup, to be honest. I also don't know what's up with Staun, to be honest.
There's going to be my next question, believe it or not, because here's the problem, Pimp. We've both been around for a long time in terms of Danish CS, and I've never seen a player that had this like stall to his career like this, where he just got to a level, feels like 4 years ago or something, I mean, it was a long time ago now. And in my brain, I still almost think of him as like up-and-coming player, could get there next year. But it's like, bro, he's had like a career almost at this point. It's kind of a bit shocking. I keep waiting for him to break through, you know.
Yeah, I feel so too. I think he's a comfort player. I think he's like, he reminds me a lot of myself in that regard, that I know from the teams where I didn't play well in, it was because I didn't have structure around me. If I was not aware of what my team is, I just didn't work out. And when you think of Staun, it's the same thing with him. When he was playing with Kadian in Heroic, where everyone knew their role every single round, the synergy was the best in the world, you know, despite the player materials and the individual firepower not even close to be the best in the world. They had periods where they played like the best team in the world. I think Staun thrived a lot in that environment. I think he needs to know what's going on around him for him to make the right calls at the right timing. He's not that gifted, you know. He's a skilled player, obviously. Talented player, obviously. Broke through when he was 15 years of age or something. What was it called? I can't even remember the first team. Fraxtus or something.
Yeah.
Obviously a very talented guy, but not that talented, you know. We're not talking about a Nico. We're not talking about a generational talent. And I think that's where he kind of stagnated now. Now with Hooksy coming back into the mix, I think he's getting more and more of that, you know, security around him. He's also started to play a little bit better. So I hope that can revive him. And I think that's what it needs, you know. I think Estrada's needs sort of not necessarily a star player, but someone to back Device up. Because Device is also not the same player he was 3 years ago. So the problem for Astralis is right now, if there was a Danish glaring talent out there, if there was someone, you know, where you felt, oh, we can bring in this guy and he will definitely elevate the firepower within the team, they should do it. And I think they would work out. I think Astralis still have the quality to be a top five team with everything they have to work with. But there's no one to pick up. You know, Danish Counter-Strike is in a dire street. It's probably the worst it's ever been since, you know, Astralis broke through, since TSM in 2015, 16 or whatever that was. And there's just no one else, you know, there's just no one obvious to pick up. There's just a lot of recycled talent or a lot of players who is just not good enough to make that step. So to be completely honest, to answer your question and we're right back to it, I think Astralis is unfixable. I don't think Astralis had 3 years where they fucked up massively by signing the wrong players at the wrong timings and nurturing the talent in a horrible way. And there were so many mistakes made, you know, from a management point of view. I think Astralis nowadays, you know, they missed that window of opportunity where they could still fix it. Today, I don't think they have that move, you know. I don't think there's players that actually suits Astralis or are good enough to join Astralis if they want to keep it Danish. So it's almost like there is no way of fixing Astralis. It's almost unfixable unless these five guys are going to work it out. Then you can argue, yeah, you can change one player, bring in another guy who's really good, but it's just going to be a lot of sidesteps right now. So I think to answer your question, I don't think you can fix it. I think you have to accept that good, you know, I think on a good note, Astralis is going to be a team that makes playoff occasionally at a big tournament, and that's good enough. But that's it, you know, until another talent comes into the mix or until a point where maybe Astralis shuts down or they go, listen, we want to sign international players. We're going to revert the team to be an English-speaking team. We're done with, you know, trying to milk the Danish crown, who, by the way, is fucking tired of you having been milked for 5 years. Sure. You know? So I think unless that happens, then I don't see how you fix Astralis to a point where they become a team like Na'Vi or a team like Falcons or a team like Mouse, for that matter, who's in contention to win trophies. That's just not realistic at the moment.
No, I even think that's why the Hooksy signing is a good, like, last thing to do almost. Because to me, if he can't make this team some sort of tactical machine that overcomes the fact that I agree they don't have, like, the same raw firepower. They don't, basically, the joke is their generational player is still Device, the same one we've all been using for the last 10 plus years. Like, there needs to be another one. I know what you mean. There isn't one, though, mate. Because I can tell you, like, I agree with Stown. To me, the problem with Stown is he was, like, quite a well-rounded player who at one point, even though he choked a bit, it was quite consistent, it would give you good output. But if you ever watched his POVs, no one was ever having their mind blown by that. There's no, like, videos like, look at the aim tech of this guy. It's not, you get that about fucking Russian rookies nowadays, but no one's ever done that with Stown. It was just more like a good player. Yabby, to me, he's never supposed to be a star player. He's more like your X Factor, you know, when you're a clutch here or there, or when he was playing aggressive roles, have an opening round where he shoots two people in the head. The real problem you have in this...
Good player, you know, that's the thing. He's a good third player.
Yeah, I agree. And then here's the thing. To me, Stare, sadly, they have, like, abused him a bit in this squad and used him as a workhorse. He is a good player, maybe like an above average player, but he's also not a superstar player. He's just a player for me who's just good in, like, sort of semi-aggressive roles. You just don't make him the pure entry or whatever. But the issue you have, is you don't have a generational, there's not even one to recruit. Like, the joke is the only other player who in theory even is vaguely in the scene, who I think came close to that talent, was Blame F. And spoiler, they already tried that. Like, that was something they tried for many years. You can even argue they wasted his time like a workhorse for a couple of years when, you know, he was carrying lineups were like, people forget this, he was carrying the lineups were like buzzing people to like top four at Colognes and stuff. Like, he's a very good player, but also, by the way, himself a very idiosyncratic player that the whole team almost has to be based around. So I know what you mean. I actually do think you nailed it there, mate. In talking through all the options, I think you arrived at the obvious last option, which is Hooksy. You really are our last hope, mate. You're Obi-Wan in Star Wars. Like, please, Hooksy, help us. You're our only hope. Unless you can make this team tactically so smart that they can overcome the firepower gap, the obvious angle is you can all speak English anyway. Just start going international. Because here's the difference. As we just talked about some of the past roster moves, there are plenty of talented fucking, like, riflers coming out of, like, Eastern Europe, for example. And if they can join your team, I actually think, by the way, the real team that's going to break CS wide open. I always say what made teams go international in the first first place was Carrigan, because he made it look like, hey, you just take players from wherever and you win. And I always used to say, yeah, you also do need the Carrigan part of that. Like, you can't just have the five players without Carrigan. It helps that you have him. But I think the move that's actually going to make everyone in CS, in my opinion, go international is Molodoy to Fury Abroad. Because before that, no one even had this guy hyped. He was just one of like five different Eastern European AWPers that you hear the rumour might join, like, not even good teams, mate, like OG or something, you know, like just not whatever those random teams. But the fact that him being added has made up for the fact that the one thing they don't seem to have in the Brazilian scene is an AWPer. And suddenly their team is right back in the mix and they're actually, you know, chopping it up and having a chance to beat top teams. I think the obvious thing you could do here is, look, you can still keep four Danish players. Again, they all speak perfect English. They're all totally fine with that. You just bring in like one star Eastern European rifle prospect and, mate, this team could cook. It could be a really good team. I don't even think you'd have any of the problems that you did have on teams that changed to English. Like, Danish people's problem is just people not liking their accent. They definitely can all speak totally fluent English. Come on.
100%. And I think that's, you know, I think I suggested that a year and a half ago, you know, as well. Because when you spoke, you know, it made me think, like, the type of player they need, you know, in Astralis right now is, you know, the config, you know, config, prime config in Astralis. Right now, today, would be perfect.
That's also, in like CS2, this guy was built for CS2. The fact he fucked up his career before, I was so sad. His whole skill set would be amazing in CS2, wouldn't it?
He would be fantastic. I think, like, when he broke through, easily one of the most talented players. Like, absolutely. Not a hard worker, not a smart guy. Just, you know, not meant to be a professional, but my God, was he good at playing the game, you know? But that's the type of player they need. And as you said, you don't find that in Denmark, but you can definitely find that internationally. You can definitely find that maybe even on Faceit, you know, to some degree.
Yeah,
and
you'd
be in a position right now where you're willing to risk it. The thing with Astralis is, and it just goes deep into the history of the organization and how they make money and how the revenue stems and et cetera. Like, the strength of Astralis in Denmark, people internationally, they know that they were strong and they know Denmark loved Astralis, but I don't think people really grasp how much they were loved. You know, when Astralis peaked, they sold more Astralis jerseys than the biggest football club in Denmark, Copenhagen, the Champions League occasionally, and the Europa League, who sells out their stadium filled with 35,000 people pretty much every single game. Still, they sold more, you know, jerseys than that big football club and had more revenue in that regard. That's how much they were loved. So I think Astralis are still clinging on to the fact that, you know, even though there may be only a 20 or 30 or 40% of that hype back then, that's still an awful lot of people kind of investing and creating revenue in Astralis. And I think they're very, very fearful of moving away from that, going international. Because let's be honest, what makes the international crowd appreciate Astralis more than someone should appreciate Na'Vi or G2 or FaZe for that? Like, nothing. Like, there's no sexiness to Astralis unless you're Danish or have that angle. Which is why I think they haven't done it. And that's what's going to be super interesting to see in 26. If Astralis continues to run as an organization, if they don't sell the organization, if someone else doesn't buy it up, or if they decide to sell off the team, then I'm sure the team would be open to go international. I'm sure the vice would be like, he's even tried it with a Johnny FaZe at some point. I'm sure Astralis and the players would love to have that opportunity. And I don't think they have that under the Astralis brand. So I'm curious to see if 26 is going to be a year where Astralis even exists. If the team moves to another organization or if someone else buys up Astralis and decides to run it as an international organization. If that doesn't happen, if let's pretend with the idea that they have to stick Danish, Astralis continues, then we have to manage our expectations. Best case, top six, top five. Worst case, it's just going to be, you know, them maybe making the major, maybe not. And it's going to be, you know, as it is, boring to follow. I'm not biased towards Danish Counter-Strike by no means. In fact, I hate it right now. I think it's dog shit. And I think the way Astralis have run the organization have destroyed Danish Counter-Strike. It destroyed part of my work as well, working for Danish television, you know. In a sense.
Has it made the interest go down, do you think?
Yeah, 100%. Like, it was all about Astralis. And there's also part of the blame is also the way we, or my bosses at Danish television, bought into that. You know, they played all the eggs in one basket, basically. And whenever Astralis didn't do well, we didn't have a job.
Right.
And so I think there's just been so much mismanagement surrounding Astralis, not only from Astralis itself, but also people who engage with them and work with them and their partners, that I hope Astralis, I don't hope they die, but I hope they make a drastic decision to change something that can, you know, live up or give it new energy or give a new outlook on it. Because if they continue to run what they've been running for the past 5 years, I don't care for it, and I sense that nobody else in the world really cares for it. Whenever Astralis gets knocked out at the Blast Bounty, the only people who care is Astralis. No one else gives a fuck, and that's the massive issue.
No, absolutely. No, I hadn't thought of that angle, but you're right. The problem is, at the moment, if the perception of the management and the organisation of Astralis itself is our identity is core to the whole lineup as Danish, then yeah, then that's going to be the box that they're going to be stuck inside. They're never even going to consider it. Because I agree with you, especially considering Device played in that NIP team, mate. I'm pretty sure he'd just be open to it. Like, someone like that wants to win, mate. They're not going to just go down with the ship for the sake of just being Danish. Maybe you can still have four Danish players. You can still essentially be Danish, but like in all the interviews you can do it, but let's just have like one fucking adopted Eastern European rifle god. How about that? Then we can win some tournaments, boys. Because that's also what frustrates me, Pimp, is as soon as you open the door that we don't have, the player doesn't have to be Danish, mate, you can keep most of the squad. Like I say, you could pick the four players you want, take the one you're kicking out, who might even be a stone, who knows, bring in like the rest of the squad to be there. I do also think people do this thing where they're like, they're so happy that Device isn't washed, because he isn't. But they do that thing where they like lie to themselves that he is like as good as he was like 4 or 5 years ago, though. Whereas the problem is he's between the two positions for me. I'd say it's more like if old Device was like a 9 out of 10 every game, I think it's pretty fair. He's obviously not a 10 out of 10. He's not peak simple or Zewu or whatever. He's like a 9 out of 10, like a very good player. I would say the difference is modern Device is more like a 7 out of 10 every game. His good games are 8 out of 10 and his bad games are 6 out of 10. So he's still a very reliable player. But here's the thing, mate, that can't be the only star name, though. Especially as I know downside, he's going to show up in the playoffs. Like, I also need a rifler too. Like, I can't just have to, I can't go, hey, Device, like, do some old fucking 28-inch shit. Like, he can't even, it's unreasonable to even expect that. I don't think that's where he's at in his career.
Yeah. You know, one of the issues, the more we talk about this, the more I think about it, you know? I mean, you think, like, the perfect player to join Astralis right now would be a config-esque player. And that made me think, okay, who else is, like, a config-esque player, okay, internationally speaking, who's a talent, who's maybe available, or who won't, okay, be costing $1 million, you know? PR from Gamer Legion. I think PR
that's
from
a pretty good one, yeah. Bright talent.
Yeah, rumor towards G2, you know, if somehow, some way you could convince him to join Astralis, that would be a much better team. But that also made me think, I feel like right now, if you signed PR and you signed Riss and you signed Ash as a coast and you brought those three elements into Astralis, Astralis would be a significantly better team. And it almost sounds ridiculous to say that, yes, you take the best part from Gamer Legion, but let's be honest, Gamer Legion is not a team that is even remotely supposed to compete at the same level as Astralis. Yet they are somewhat
true.
Similar. Riss, you know, a player who's been around forever, a player who was stuck in NIP, seems alive in Gamer Legion. He renewed. Maybe he's not a star player, but Riss is not worse than Staun is right now. I'd even argue that he's maybe performing better. I think PR is a great prospect for the future. Only a question of time before he moves on to a better team. And Ash obviously has a coaching ability. Again, Rogger, I don't know if he's going to make the difference. I think Rogger is actually a decent coach, and I think he's getting too much flack for what he did in OG. That's also under very limited restrictions.
Sure.
And I think the same for Astralis now. Like, who is he supposed to sign?
Yes.
Outside of the whole Kaden bringing him, that was a bad idea. But was that Rogger? Was that Kasper Straube? Who knows? I think PR, Ash, and Riss would make Astralis a better team. But that also is to me, a clear sign of where they're at right now. Three players from Gamer Legion makes Astralis a significantly better team, which I think it would, you know, depending on who you replace. Then you also find yourself in a position where, well, you're not competing for trophies, right? So I think at some point they have to make the sacrifice. And I think part of the problem as well, from what I hear internally as well, from people who has worked in Astralis or been around the team, like, I'm sure if you walked into the Astralis office, they still see themselves as a top five organization in the world. You know, they still see themselves as like a rule breaker,
right,
or an organization that has attraction power, where players should be like, yeah, we want to join Astralis, big brand, you know, rich history. All players right now are looking at Astralis and being like, why do we want to join? There was even rumors that they tried to sign Acor as an AWP player when no one wanted to fucking join Astralis. And he said no. You know, if you get to a point where you can't even sign tier 2, tier 3 Danish talent because they don't want to join you, maybe you shouldn't be thinking on the office levels, you know, that, yeah, we're still an attraction power. We're still a big, like, it just feels so disconnected from the world. And it makes me fucking mad talking about it, because I do want something to be shaken up within that organization. And I just don't see it happen. Maybe internally it's happening. Who knows? I hope so. But from the outside and the way they communicate and the way they project themselves, I almost feel bad for the players, because I think Astralis, as we spoke about as well, I think right now Hook, Vice, and the boys are doing a decent job with what they have to work with. They're getting better, and I do think by the end of 26 they will be a significantly better team. So For me, it's not on the players. It's always been on the management of Astralis. And I think there's so many different ways to critique it. And now we're in a window of opportunity. There is no players to sign. There is no Danish prospect. There is no missed opportunities because you had so many throughout 3 or 4 years where you fucked it up time after time after time. And now you find yourself in a situation where you can't even fix your own issue. There's no options. And I guess that's what you call karma in a sense. I don't know.
No, I mean, what's basically caught up with them is they did essentially for years get to have the unfair advantage that even in the era when all the heroic lineups were actually better and used to outperform them, and in terms of if you were a fan of In the Server, obviously that's the team you'd rather watch. If you ever went to any event in Denmark, obviously Astralis was way bigger. In the same, the obvious analogy would be, if you look like last season in the Premier League, Newcastle is a much better team than Manchester United, but Manchester United is an enormous club, mate. They're one of the biggest clubs in the world. The joke is, this is why I use this analogy. If you're a Newcastle fan, you're like, wait a minute, why do all these players join Man United? They're shit now. Like, it's like, because unfortunately, that player isn't thinking of the current Man United. He's thinking, I'm going to be in the good Man United and I'm going to get to be a legend at Old Trafford, etc. It's the same thing. What they abused within Astralis was anyone who was Danish, though, knew what you're talking about. They knew how huge the club is within the country. At the time, same concept. It's like, I told Bobski, this is what I actually did tell him back in the day. I told him, your problem is this, mate. Yeah, of course everyone dreams of being the fifth player to join that Astralis, but I said that's not the Astralis you're ever going to be in, though, mate. Like, the fact they're bringing you in actually signals they're heading to a different Astralis, and so what will happen is you'll be in Astralis the team, but it won't be the environment you're imagining. And they got away with that for a long time, but I know what you mean, especially anyone who isn't Danish. Nobody else gives a fuck. Like, PR's from like Czech Republic or something, I don't even know any of that shit. He doesn't know about like the Royal Arena being full. He just thinks, how good is this team and can I join? And then also the other thing was, within Denmark at least, the one thing all Danish players knew is that Astralis could pay the highest salary. That was also a famous thing, that you're going to get like a good, as long as you're not the talent player, obviously, as long as you're in the real main team, you can get a very healthy salary. People knew people like Device and BMF had excellent contracts. So, which also, by the way, I'm going to go ahead and guess that isn't the case anymore. Like, I imagine they've had to downsize a bit. They probably can't pay crazy money. That seems like actually the end of the Nikola Dion, Kasper Schraub era of that sort of business stuff, right?
That's right. It took so long to sign Hooksy, right? I'm not sure they could find the money to sign Hooksy, even though that after that event he stood in for at the PGL, where he did fantastic at Astana.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think they were at risk of not signing Hooksy because they couldn't find a way to put him on a contract. So, yeah, that's why I think in 2026, we may not see the Astralis we used to. Maybe they'll shake things up. Maybe they'll sell off the team. Maybe the organization will cease to exist. There's been a lot of different rumors. I don't know what's going to happen, but... Yeah, I think you're right. Like, what you're describing is goodwill, you know, basically, right? You had a lot of goodwill.
Yes.
Manchester United, a great example. They could continue to do that, you know, for maybe 2 or 3 years. But United continues to play 18th or 16th at the Premier League for another 3 or 4 years. They won't be able to attract the good players. They will move to the good teams. And the same thing happened in Astralis. You had 2 or 3 years where you bought goodwill because you had such a fantastic period. And then you managed to fuck up not only 1 year of goodwill, not two, but 3 or 4 years of goodwill in esports, who's only been around for 15 years. It's crazy, but it's also a case study in how not to do. So I guess, you know, they made history in more than one sense. Congratulations.
Even though I will say, I definitely didn't ever sit down, Pimp, and in my brain run through the idea of like, what if Rez, the old NIP player, that's a new one on me. But actually, as you say it, mate, it's a better idea than it initially sounds. Because I will say, I do watch a lot of Gamer League and stuff, because I'm biased. Like, I actually know Ash, I've done a whole show of content with him. He's also one of those people, I think his story's kind of cool, and I think he is necessary for the scene. So I also follow him, because I want to see, to me, again, to give a football analogy, he is like one of those people, like, I don't know, David Moyes or something, where you don't give him the best team, but if you give him like an average team, mate, he'll overperform. Yeah. He'll have him in way better shape. You'll get that player that you thought was all right, and suddenly he'll look at, hey, this guy could be an international or something. So I do think if you look at Gamer League, it's sort of almost a test case of what happens if you take a tier 2 team or org, but give someone who actually like knows the game and can watch this game and scout it, give him like control over the roster. And so far, obviously he's killed it. But if anything, we've discussed this many times on Snake and Banter, the problem is I don't want him to be too loyal to Gamer League, mate, because like, to me, you've both used each other very successfully for the last few years to both get to an excellent position. But like, they are holding you back at this point, mate. Like, you probably should at this point be in G2 or Team Liquid or Astraza, some like bigger org that can give you the power to actually, here's the difference, instead of having to find PR now, you could just sign like the really good players and actually like potentially win stuff. And the reason why I don't hate the idea of signing to Astraza, mate, is one, he did literally resurrect Rez. Absolutely. He's done an amazing job with that. And if people haven't watched Rez play this year, that's what I was saying about, I watch all the Game Legion games. He's actually a very good player again. Like, his actual fragging is fucking legit. Like, all those memes about I am fucking Oakland Rez or whatever, like, it's sort of real though. You actually can get to that level again. That was a meme for years, it's real now. But the other reason why you sign someone like an Ash is, if you are going to open that international door, mate, that the cheat code of that guy is how many different players he finds. It's not that it's not like he's still working with the original Gamer Legion from 2 years ago. He's had to swap pretty all the players, but he's got an unreal eye for finding the next one. So I feel like, especially Pimp, if we're an that doesn't have millions to throw around, we're not Falcons, you actually need the guy who has the, essentially he's trying to be like Arsene Wenger, mate. My joke is, I always tell people this story, it's not that Arsene Wenger, by the way, signed, you know, Thierry Henry and these mega players that people knew had talent. The crazy ones is where he would go, and for real, he was like scouting the like Cameroon league to find George Weir or something in the 90s, which is like, what are you doing? But that's like, that's what this guy does. He watches all the fucking online cops and all the shit games none of us care about, and he finds, and the key thing about that sort of persons, why they're worth their weight in gold, is because they find you the guy, here's the example, they find you like a wrinkle, but before he's joined NIP and he's got the $1 million buyout, you need that guy where you're the one signing him for the 50 or 100k, you know what I mean? Like, so I know what you mean. If you're going to go with like a different approach, cause actually, by the way, it is fair, people do always forget there's coaches in some of these teams. I notice, I agree, they always talk about Astralis, but they just talk about IGL or Staun or is Device any good, and no one, it's not even that they flame rugger, they just forget coach position exists. But that is another position, by the way. If we're going international, we can consider it national for the coach too. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's an endless discussion, I feel like, for Astralis, but at the end of the day, I'm just excited to see in 2026. You know, there's also, I don't know if people know, you know, but obviously Sipnik's being an assistant coach in Mouse right now. I mean, if you're Astralis, he's had an awful lot
you could bring him over as head coach at some point.
Yeah, why didn't you bring him over as a main coach, you know, if he's doing a good job, or he's learned a lot from Cyclone. They're still paying his salary.
I believe he's technically under contract still, yeah, exactly.
Exactly, same for Clay. I'm pretty sure he has a contract that is running out this year as well. He's still getting paid a little bit, you know, in Astralis, and I think that's why they are in financial problems, that not only are you paying Device an awful lot of money, he did sign a 3-year extension with him, you know, a year after he joined from NIP when he did well and the team was somewhat upwards. Spent a lot of money on Staun and Yabby. They were also very expensive in salary. And you have two players like Glaive and Sipnik, who hasn't played for your organization in 2 years, and you're still paying them an awful lot of money, right? So it's just, I don't think people grasp the severity of how mismanaged it's been and how much it limits Astralis right now, which is why I hope for 26 that, you know, go international, do something, shake it up, and let's see what happens. And until then, let's see if we can get the most out of this team. And I mean, by all means, if they become a top five team, or if they make final at the major, you know, in Budapest, then continue, you know, then you earn the right to maybe give another shot. But the second it doesn't work out, be ready to hit that red button and then change direction. Otherwise, it's just going to be two more years of people moaning about why Astralis are not good. And we know why, you know, we know why, because they don't dare to do shit anymore. And that's the issue for me.
By the way, I don't ask this because you have a past connected, you know, the inside. I just ask purely as an outsider. Is the sense within Denmark and the Danish, is the sense that Glaive's just done? Do people think he's just not going to get another chance? Because I was, listen, it's not the idea he was like kicked out of events, but as far as I can tell, they themselves have just moved on. Like, so for whatever reason, no one seems to ever bring this guy's name up, mate. He never gets put forward in those conversations of what if this person, is there a sense that he's just done in his career, mate? What's going on?
I think it's the expectations of where he wants to be and kind of his salary demands compared to where he's at.
Right.
I think that's the biggest issue. As far as I'm aware, Astralis played a big part of his salary in ends still. They split the bill, basically.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure Glaive's contract runs out now, end of 26, which is why Ince had to renegotiate with Glaive. So if he wanted to stay with Ince, then Ince would have to cover whatever salary demand Clay would have from 26 onwards. And I don't think Ince felt that was a good deal for them. Maybe I'm pretty sure they valued him. I'm pretty sure they would have liked to keep him around. And could they split the salary with Astralis for another year? They would have. But paying his full salary for themselves was not worth the investment. So I think that's where it's at. Glaive is, I mean, you know what I think of Glaive. I think Glaive is the greatest in-game leader that's ever existed, you know, in his peak, longevity-wise as well. He wasn't able to do it outside Astralis. That sucks. But I also do think that, you know, he ran out of energy in Astralis. So people forget that, was it 2014 when we kicked him off Copenhagen Wolves? He took a year off where he didn't play Counter-Strike at all. He just stopped playing because he also back then was kind of burned out. And then he came back, played in a couple of shit teams, C-Play, Heroic, then got the offer to Astralis. Had four fantastic years in Astralis, but the second he hit adversity again, he kind of stopped, you know, with that hunger that he used to have. And I don't think Glaive works unless he is a fully focused player. And then he's just a bang average in-game leader. So to be honest, I think he is kind of done for at the highest level. I would love to see someone take a chance on him that could reignite him. But unless a really good team come out of nowhere and tries to sign Glaive at a high salary, then I don't think he wants to play at tier 3 or tier 4 yes. level anymore. I don't even know, man. BC game, if Nexa doesn't work out with Simple, lots of money, why don't you take a chance and bring Glaive in to play with fucking Simple and see what happens? You know, it seems like a bit of a joke anyway. But outside of that, I have a hard time coming back to anywhere it's worth following, to be honest.
No, I know what you mean. There's actually two factors that are a problem for him then. One is, as you say, I mean, people forget he just had a family. So he's one of those people who doesn't want to like start over his whole CS career. Like he's 16 and play for like $2,000 a month. Yeah, he probably wants like a healthy contract, which the problem then is that limits who you can join. You basically probably need to join a top org. But then the problem is you haven't had any results. So you also have the angle where it's quite comparable as an IGL to the position Simple is in. In theory, a bunch of people would want Simple. A bunch of people still think he could be awesome. The real problem is though, no one can really answer, and I don't care how many times Simple tells us this, we're talking about to know it as a fact. We have to actually know deep down that he really is totally committed to CS2, you know what I mean? You have to know that he is really just going to play for 6 months now, no matter how, but if this team loses every map online, he's still going to try super high, he's going to grind. No one can answer that, unfortunately, and I feel like at this point, it's not even about answering, it's about just doing it. So I think there's a similar thing. I think the real problem you had in Ents was they barely ever even went to any fucking lands, mate, so you never really got the kind, like that's where people would have been able to judge Glaive. Like, if anything, I actually think people did temporarily get hyped when they won that Elisa tournament last year. The problem was, right after that, they didn't have the major. They basically had a massive break, and they even actually lost online games that made everyone just forget about the hype. So I know what you mean. Even though I do think there are people in the scene who do still believe in him, I think the problem is his name's just never going to be the one that comes to the top of their mind when they make a move or they're considering people. Because I know what you mean. It's like part of you is scared also that if you sign him and it doesn't work out, you just retires or something, or it's like the last 6 months or something. It's a tough spot to be in. I just wondered for your case, because I'm sure you're like me. It's more like, because I do think he is comparable to Simple in that sense. I think IGLs aren't about like raw talent in the game anymore. I think if you have a mind like him, Carrigan, fuck it, throw them all in there. Snappy, it's the reason I never gave up on Snappy after Falcons. It's more like the same question. Is he still into it? Does he still want to be the best? If he does, I think players like that, if you give them the right environment, they can still be quality pieces, you know? I think Snappy's even shown it now in NIP, right? He's been written off 50 times over.
yeah, exactly. And I think that's the issue. Like, I think mentally, like, Glaive is not at that point anymore. I don't think he wants
right
bad enough anymore. I don't think he believes in himself anymore, to be honest. And even when, I remember when he got booted from Astralis and when they brought in, was it Blame F or Blame F took over in game, whatever. Even internally in Astralis, they were like, he was still doing a good job. He was still working hard.
Right.
He just didn't work a lot, you know. It's like, obviously you can sense when priorities are changing. You said wife, family, kids, etc. There was just a bit of a change, and they felt that maybe, you know, it was still in there somewhere, but they couldn't get it out of him, you know, which is why it would be fun to, I don't know, see Glaive join Gamer Legion. I know that's not going to happen.
No.
That's not the project, but I think a guy like Ash could maybe get that in him, you know, and I very much agree with you. It's not whether or not he's good enough or whether or not he has the qualities to do it. It's whether or not he wants it and he still believes and is willing to work hard enough for it. Because, as I said, no one I've ever played with or heard about has ever been better than Glaive in his prime. You know, not even prime Carrigan, not prime Fallen. I don't give a fuck who you are. Prime Apex, for that matter, if we consider Apex to be prime right now. No one is. No one has been or will probably ever. That's tough to know, right? But probably will ever be as good as Glaive as an leader in his prime. He just had a sixth sense for the game no one else had. And I think, even speaking to Dupree as well, working with him as talent, he very much agrees with that. I don't think Dupree holds Glaive to the highest standard as I do, maybe, but I think at the end of the day, whoever has ever played with Glaive will tell you that he was the smartest guy around ever. Carrigan will say it. Pronax, back in the day when he was, you know, in-game leading Fnatic, said he learned a lot. There was even this, I think we spoke about that as well, the Infected team or whatever team it was, where Glaive, Pronax, and Kerrigan was playing on the same team, and they were like, yeah, Glaive is the, no doubt, you know, no shout. He was the best man for the job. So I think that speaks volumes to that as well. It's just a question of whether he can find that inner fire again. And I think him staying in Innsbruck for as long as he did and being okay with having these long breaks, as you said, where they don't go and just play online Counter-Strike. He's basically playing Counter-Strike to make a living now. And the second you hit that notion, you're done for at the top level.
Yeah, it's why actually, well, you know when fans do that thing where this is, by the way, this is what you call in English humour, a self-report. You don't know that by saying this answer, you're sort of telling on yourself that you're an idiot, which is, you know when a fan goes like, well, I'd still play if they gave me millions. It's like, I'm sorry, there isn't a player like that in the world, I'm telling you. Even the person who might even lie and, you know, flex like, oh, I'm just doing it for the bag. You have to, on some level, actually love the grind and playing, etc. Like, it's true. Someone like Simple or Glaive, by the way, if they can get their spot on a team, they should never retire. They could make a lot of money for the rest of the day. But the difference is, as you can see with someone like Simple, who, by the way, could make literally millions immediately if he was a top team now, unless he actually really loves the game, you just won't get through the fucking the weeks, mate. It'll be too much. You'll break. It'll be like thinking, I don't really actually want to get healthy when I go to the gym. I just want to look amazing at the very end. It's like, you'll never get there, mate. You have to sort of embrace the grind of each day. And you even have to use the analogy, you even have to enjoy like the strain and the feeling of the muscle moving. It's if you don't get into the minutia like that, it's just gonna the long-term big dream, you'll never get to that point. Because I also think what this ties into is a reason, Pimp, why I actually do think Carrigan's case as like, could he be the GOAT IGL, has gotten stronger. It's not that he's won that many more championships, he's won quite a few, but he hasn't won like anything close to Glaive's amount. It's I think what people are realizing is really incredible is it's so insane to how many times he, at the end of the year, comes back and the next year tries 100% again. Like, that's the craziest thing. This guy has, like, almost unlimited appetite to be great at Counter-Strike. I'd even say the same thing with the great star players. Like, you know what? I was myself a skeptic of Zewu, but one thing I'll give him full marks on is, much like a Simple and a Nico, this guy just never stops, mate. He never has, like, his idea of a down year would still be a fantastic year for anyone else. Like, that's the great. A lot of players can have the one amazing year, the two amazing years. Like, I can tell you, I'll try not to speak too much out of school, but this is things I know from behind the scenes. Put it this way, Pimp. It wasn't just that like weird football injury that Olaf Meister had back in the day when he was the best player in the world. I also think if you know him as a person, he never really had that like Michael Jordan, like, I want to step on your throat and kill you all. Like, he's like more of a chill guy, you know. So it doesn't surprise me he had years afterwards where he wasn't close to the best player. He was just a good player or a team player. It's actually so rare. And Glaive had it for a few years, but this is why if you ever really can go like 10 years at the top, you deserve to be treated like a god, mate. That, there's something special about your personality at that point in time. That it's not that like the others are whack for not having it. You're special if you have that, though. That's why I do think those players with the crazy longevity deserve the props, mate.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why it's always, you know, whenever you discuss with, it may sound harsh, you know, but an average fan or an average dude who's never been competing at a high level, I don't think people grasp how hard it is to, as you said, come back year after year after year after year, or come back after, you know, you have a summer break, you have a winter break, and every time you had to recalibrate and then come back as hungry as you were before, and maybe even hungrier, you know, because the level is getting better and better and better. It's longevity is one of the most underrated aspects of being a good Counter-Strike player. And we always speak of Counter-Strike players in the moment. How good are you right now? Riss is a good player now, but he's never going to be a superstar again. You know? But he can still be a valuable asset to a lot of different teams. But the fact of the matter is he's been around for a very, very long time, since 2015 or 16 when he joined NIP. He's been competitive, playing at a high level. And I think once you retire and once you think back of Riss in 5 or 10 years, you know, you'd be like, okay, that was a damn good player. Maybe his peaks wasn't as high as an Olaf Meister or who else, you know. But he actually remained competitive for a far longer period. And I think that is something you can appreciate if you've been a competitor yourself, because that's, at the end of the day, that's why I stopped my career. I was 21 or 22 when I stopped, because I lost the desire to do the work. You know, I was always grinding and working hard, and I pride myself to be one of the hardest working players of my era, almost. But I also didn't realize at all that for me doing that in 3 or 4 years, that meant my career was going to be short, you know. And I just didn't have the hunger to do that or continue to do that. So I don't know how Kerrigan does it. I don't know how Dupree did it for such a long period. I don't know how these players who've been doing it for such a long time, and I think part of it is winning, you know. Winning keeps you hungry and winning makes it fun. But if you're struggling and struggling and struggling and struggling, then you're probably not going to stick around. Kerrigan probably could have been a great example of that when he joined was it envious or something, you know, for half a year trying to build a shit players and whatever, you know, and has that didn't really work out. And then I think he got a good offer in Mouse, and then he went on to win something. Face, he won something, and then you can always like restart yourself when you're always on the of doing something great. But if you have 2 or 3 years where you're just going to be shit and shit and shit and nothing works out for you, like risk case, you know, in NIP where nothing worked out for 3 years, for him to come back to a decent level, that's almost more impressive being the best player, you know, or being one of the best players for 2 years. For risk to make a comeback where he's arguably, you know, in top 30, top 40 of the riflers available, years where everything was just shit, I don't grasp how he did that. I wouldn't be able to, and that's why I quit. But he kept around, you know. So I appreciate that. I appreciate longevity more than I think people in the business, people who's tried, people who even yourself, you know, with the way you do content, where you just never stop. You've been involved in a lot throughout the years, right? You just continue no matter what. I think people in the business respect and appreciate that way more than people who follow Counter for 1 or 2 years. They can't really grasp the concept of, oh, he's been trying for 7 years. Well, I didn't even watch Counter-Strike 7 years ago, so why do I care? You know, I don't think you're good now. So having those conversations with fans who hasn't been around for a long time, to me, useless in a sense. Doesn't add any value.
No, but it is on my side, on the content side. I would phrase it this way. Someone might launch a podcast. It might be amazing. It might be a pro player. It might be a scene figure. Everyone might be loving it for the first few episodes when they have like their famous friend guest on, some player. All I'll say is this, as someone who's done thousands of podcasts, let me know when you get to episode 50, because until you get to that point in time, you might not even be here in 2 years. You know what I mean? Same argument as with the players. Yeah, there's a lot of people, especially when we're going on stats, they have a 3-month period. They look amazing. They have 1 year where they're awesome. Like, that Olofmeister one's a great example. If you went to the end of 2015, bro, you could have thought Olofmeister would end up as the GOAT of CS. He looked unbelievable. But within something like 2 years later, he was not even in the conversation. People don't even put his name in that convo with Simple. And I mean, the joke is even Cold Zero doesn't even get in there anymore, because that was only 2 years on paper. So yeah, it just shows how ruthless the industry is. But that's also why, I know what you mean, that's why people who have done it a long time, we know that like you can have moments where you peak, you can have moments where everything's going great. But the question is, what is like the long-term prospect? Because if you really do like have excellence year after year, I agree, that shows like an extra quality about you that's just very rare. I think you should be celebrated.